You are listening to an entertainment program put together by a company called Financial Ineptitude. Anything said on this show is not an endorsement or professional advice. Would you really want to tell a court of law you were suing us because you thought taking financial advice from two idiots on a podcast put out by Financial Ineptitude was a good idea? Really? Clown hat, smiley face.
Financial Ineptitude presents Two Bulls in a China Shop. You can find our podcast at twobullsinachinashop.com or just search Two Bulls in a China Shop wherever you stream your podcasts. Well, hello and welcome, folks. Welcome. You've made it to the China Shop. The doors are open. We got a really amazing, awesome, super fantastic episode today. But first, let me introduce myself. I'm Shopkeeper Dan. With me, as always, is Kyle, creator of financialineptitude.com. How are you doing today, Kyle?
I'm doing good. I'm excited about today's guest. I'm excited because I think you're going to be carrying it more today.
Oh, shit.
So I get to be the one listening. Most of it.
I did not agree to do a podcast because I like to work.
I know, right?
Yeah. Well, so speaking of, we are joined today. We have a wonderful, wonderful guest coming back to the shop. The one, the only, Victorio.
Woo!
Thanks for having me, guys.
Scrolling through the charts in sequence. Hockey's on the with ticket, the it's some pro shit. Nike breaking out, got a piece of it. Got a plan, he ain't taking no Wall Street shit. Vico show you how to get it.
You guys told me you'd have a song for me.
Lower highs, higher lows, higher highs. Basically, I'm saying either way, he about to buy in. Always about
I've been
to
listening
buy
to this
him
on a loop.
He could trade like Johnny Paul. Son, he could give you cash passion. It's a thriller when he slaps hedge funds. Maybe don't you wanna trade with Vico? He could trade like Johnny Paul. Son, he could give you fast action.
Just this one, eh?
And you know he out there every day with it. Vico show you how to get it. It go lower lows, lower highs, higher lows, higher highs. Basically, I'm saying either way, he about to buy. Yeah, he always about to buy. Yeah.
That's my wife's favorite part.
That's my favorite part, too.
Welcome back to the shop!
Oh, amazing.
Vic, how are you doing?
Thanks for having me back, guys. That's amazing. I'm doing great. I was excited to come back. I was waiting for that call. It's been months now.
Oh, really? I would have asked a lot sooner if I had realized you was waiting on us.
We tried to get you...
Oh, no, wait a minute. Yeah, no, that's not fair.
We tried to get you back on to be the guest host.
Yeah, I was away for a bit.
You went to Europe for a month. Yeah, that wasn't our fault.
Yeah, that was on me.
How was that trip anyway?
That was amazing. I'm upset that I'm back. Yeah.
Did you do any trading while you were there?
I did a bit. I was there for about 4 weeks. The first half of it, I did trade here and there, but mostly just like swings and like longer term things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What time does the market open there?
The market opens at 4:30 p.m.
That's dangerous.
Yeah.
So it's right about the time when you're relaxing with a
couple of drinks.
It's not that bad because people usually go out really late there. So like by the time I'd finish around like 11, 12, like my friends would be getting ready to go out. So it'd work perfectly.
Do your friends over there, do they like trade at the European exchanges or are they just all?
Yeah, actually one of my buddies that I'm really close with, we've been childhood friends, he trades futures.
Oh, nice.
So he and I would trade like on a daily basis. He has like an office space like on his property. It was good, yeah.
How many monitors does he have?
I think he's only got like three.
Only three?
Yeah, only three. It was a change of pace for me.
I keep seeing George's setup when I watch his video updates. He's got like nine. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I think he's got six at home. I've got five. But yeah, it's kind of overkill.
Yeah, Dan's got six. Nice. I've got two, but they're at least 27-inch TVs, so it's basically four.
It might as well be.
All right. Well, so as folks, longtime listeners know, Vic is part of the Trade Pro Academy. He kind of set up does all the options course videos with the exception of order flow, and we're excited to have him back to talk about options. And I'd actually like to get started asking you about order flow and how you use order flow to inform your trading, because I don't currently have any order flow myself.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm trading with one eye closed.
Yeah, I do it a kind of different way than maybe like Sarah or some other people might do it.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to day trading, I think everyone kind of does it the same way. And it's like looking at an order flow platform like Quantdata, for example. Like, we've got a partnership with Quantdata, so they were nice enough to help us out and help our like friends at Trade Pro Academy out. And it's more of just seeing who's buying a lot of something, you know, because for order flow and options, you have both sides, right? You have a buy side and a sell side, because, you know, you can sell options, you can buy options.
Mm-hmm.
So when I day trade, I'm more directional. So that means that I kind of want to just dismiss the noise of potential like sellers, because, right, they're not really driving the price higher by like mass buying. So, or lower for that matter, because I'd like to look at buyers of both calls and puts.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd look at trades that occur above the ask. So that would be aggressive buying for calls or puts.
Why would a trade be above the ask?
Well, that's like, it's an aggressive order above the ask, right? So like if you're buying at the ask, for example, you're probably going to get filled above the ask. Like, let's say the ask is at a dollar, right?
Mm-hmm.
If I put in the order at $1.05, right, it's going to fill me right away.
Gotcha.
It doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to trade at $1.05, but that's the order that I'm putting in.
Okay, so you're actually seeing the orders entered when you're looking at your flow?
Yeah, exactly. So those are going to be like aggressive market orders is the way I see them. Because like even if you're like whatever you're trading, like futures or whatever, if you put an order to buy the futures at like above the ask, right, it's going to be pretty much triggered at market.
Yeah.
It's probably not going to fill you where you think you're getting filled. It's going to give you a more favorable price just because it's super liquid. But in some options, right, the liquidity is not extremely tight. So if you get filled above the ask, you're probably just kind of moving the price by yourself if you're putting in the orders up there, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'd look at those mainly just above the ask, so I know they're aggressive buyers, and I'd weed out a lot of the smaller premium. So I look at premium that's like above like 50,000. That means like one person or one trader is putting in a $50,000 position on a certain contract.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just like a part of it. Like you can if you see like one, for example, like I don't know, Ford, because we talked about Ford, so that's the stock in my head right now. If you see like one Ford position that comes in at like 50,000 and like no other ones throughout the day, then it doesn't really tell you that much. But if it's just continuous throughout the day, like for example, today, Tesla was getting hit with 850 calls that expire this week, like all day long. So that started to occur earlier on in the day and that caught our eye. So we're looking at Tesla and we're thinking, okay, well, Tesla just based on that should have a nice run, but where do you get in? That's where like the technical aspect comes into play. Because just because I see the flow doesn't mean I'm just going to throw it in right away, because I don't know what the stop's going to be that way, right? It could pull back like a percent on the underlying and then just start rocketing, which is fine, but do I want to take that risk? Right? Probably not. So if like the calls keep coming in one after the other and there's sweeps. So a sweep is a order that comes in and is okay being filled on any market, right? On any exchange.
Right.
Because you can be picky with the exchanges, but a sweep just wants to get filled, right? It's just like a super aggressive market order. So if you see a lot of those, like we call them repeat sweeps that are coming in like Tesla today, just 850, 850, 850, one after the other that started to happen like earlier on in the day and continue throughout the whole day, that's going to tell me that Tesla's probably going to rip pretty hard. So in our live trading room today, we were like, hey, you know what, above 776 on Tesla, I'm gonna buy some calls, right? And it moved like it had like a $20 move into like 796 from there, and it didn't really pull back like back below that level.
Looking at the chart right now, it looks pretty nice.
Yeah, and it just kept going, right? Like, and the calls kept coming in. So I was like, hey, like this, when you see something like that in order flow, like when you have a platform like Quantdata, for example, and you see these repeat sweeps coming in when you have like a filter on, because you know it's going to be aggressive buying. If I had both ends of the filter on, so like if I had above ask, at ask, below bid, and at bid, it doesn't give you that like clear information of what's aggressive buying or what's aggressive selling, you know? You kind of get a mix and you have to start figuring things out yourself. So it's like, is this a spread? Is this a hedge? And when I filter it that way, I know, okay, they're aggressively buying this. Some people may not like that, but I think it's super effective.
So when somebody throws a big, huge position like that, how hard is it for them to get out of that position, like to take their profit? And can you see that too?
It depends on like how liquid the actual options and like the underlying are. Like, for example, Tesla today, if you take a look at the options chain, I'm not looking at it, I'm on a different computer, but I was trying to look at it. But anyways, if you take a look at the options chain on Tesla, there's just heavy, heavy volume above like 800 on the calls for this week that expire, right? A50 probably has a lot of volume. So depends on the liquidity. So when you start opening positions like that, and there's just like a lot that are flowing in, then it becomes pretty liquid and you don't really have to worry about something like that. But like, for example, if it was just a random name, like, I don't know, something that doesn't get traded often. I don't know off the top of my head, but something that has a widespread, it doesn't get traded often. If you're the only one that puts in a big order like that, then it's going to be kind of hard for you to get filled without a loss. And to answer the other question, you don't know when they're selling these positions either.
Mm-hmm. That's always been something I've been trying to figure out. Are they buying this because they think it's going to hit that price? Or are they just trying to profit on a quick move, IV spike?
So the rule of thumb is, like, if it's a weekly and you're trading that week, it's going to be a profit, like a quick profit take. They're not going to hold it until the end of the week, most likely.
Gotcha.
Like, they're probably not banking that it's going to hit that price by the end of the week, because like Tesla right now just shy of $800, right? 790 or whatever. Yeah. It is. And I don't know how much volume there is on the 850 call, but realistically, like, yeah, it's Tesla. It could go $60 within the week, but it's probably not going to, right?
Right.
There's a lower probability of that happening. I think they're just in it for the quick move, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we've caught people scalping with like multi-million-dollar positions on like flow before. So it's not out of the ordinary per se.
Right.
So that Tesla position, it was the aggressive buying that caught your attention?
Yeah, yeah. Like, because Tesla, it started the open pretty well, and then it started rotating for the first like 15, 20 minutes. And all of a sudden, like, you just see calls light up the whole order flow ladder. So it's just call Tesla, and it's not really going anywhere. I'm like, huh, like, let's find a level where if it breaks, there's probably going to be some kind of like strong momentum move with all these calls coming in. It was just like a no-brainer, right? That doesn't mean buy it right away, because it dropped like $6-$7 before it actually broke the level, even with the calls coming in. So that's why you should probably understand the technical analysis aspect of it too.
Right, right. And following up on that, how do you use order flow if you've already used technical analysis? Say like you're looking at Facebook and you're like, wow, these levels look great.
Yeah.
Do you then watch the order flow as part of the confirmation of getting in, or is at that point you're just watching the level?
It becomes like a very good confirmation tool. So it can appear before or after, right? So like, let's just say Facebook 355, that's the level that I'm watching this week. So prior to that, if you're seeing a lot of calls coming in that are, let's say, 365, 360, whatever it is, but you see a lot of like repeat calls coming in on Facebook and the thing's like $3 below the level. Again, like that's... like, I'm going to wait for that level to get hit because I know that they're confirmed with those calls, you know? And it's the other way around. So, like, if I have the level already and I'm watching, like, a volume spike through it, it doesn't necessarily mean if there's no flow, it's not going to run a bit. But it really helps if you start to see flow as soon as that level starts getting broken.
Hmm.
So, it's like, you can trade without flow. You can see the moves. You can make the moves, like, the breakout moves. But it just becomes, like, that much more convincing when there's, like, a lot of money going into these positions. Because, like, Tesla was the highest traded premium today, right?
I'll take your word for it.
Yeah.
That sounds reasonable.
Hold on. Let me sign up for Quant Data really quick and log on and figure out how to use it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's right.
Did you really just confirm that?
No.
Okay.
Anyway, no, I did not just sign up for Quant Data. No,
okay.
That didn't.
Yeah, but it was it's the highest trade premium today. So like it's usually up there, but when you see like that much call buying on Tesla like throughout the day, it's not like 100% guaranteed, but there's a very high probability that you see that push.
Well, I notice there seems to be like a common theme with all the stocks that you tend to focus on. Can you walk us through the process of like how you developed your watch list and what kind of considerations go through into picking those?
And so like we're still talking about the day trading aspect. I know you had some questions about like the swing trading. We'll get to that too. But like in terms of the day trading aspect, like I really like to see like potential breaks and reversals. So like, If a stock is coming into a high, right, like an all-time high or some kind of like wedge break or like some kind of bull flag break, right, like on a daily basis on like a larger scale, then it looks attractive for a day trade as well. Not only a swing trade, but a day trade.
Mm-hmm.
The thing about the day trade is that you don't have to be right for long to make money with it. And there's a little less like confusion and like... worry that it'll continue for like a good few days, especially when like the market's kind of like rocky right now. And I mean like the overall market, like the SPY, for example. So like, I haven't really taken too many swing trades over the past few weeks, just because of like the uncertainty in the overall market. So like, you'd have to find relative strength and then like, maybe it fails, you know, there's not really too much conviction in that other than like, again, like really convincing relative strength moves. But overall, it's a very similar process as to what I do with like swing trades. I'll just look for areas that are about to break on a daily, on an hourly. Mm-hmm. And the larger the level is, the more of a potential move there is. Like, for example, let's go back to Tesla, right? Tesla, if you look at it on a daily chart from last week, right? On Friday, it had a really nice bull flag that shaped up, right? It had like a key resistance. I can't remember where the exact level was. 764-ish, maybe?
Yeah, that looks right.
Around 764 into Friday. So that level breaks and that one becomes a potential swing trade, but even better, it's such a huge level that you can extract like quick profits out of it for a day trade.
Mm-hmm.
So that's like one of the examples. Like, I'll just use those breakout patterns. So what I'm doing is I'm just finding stocks that are going to ideally break an all-time high, because there's like a really good potential move there. An all-time high that's been tested multiple times, right? If it's coming into an all-time high that it hasn't seen in like 5 months or like a year, then it's great. Stocks that are coming into like monthly, quarterly highs, stocks that are shaping up some kind of breakout pattern. You know, there's like multiple different breakout patterns, and like cup and handles or whatever it is, right? It's just if there's a strong resistance and it's about to break out, I don't care what it's called, that looks like a pretty good trade, like on a daily chart, right? The longer the time frame, the better too.
So when you spot something and the breakout does happen, how do you get in?
So again, like if we're assuming it's a day trade, what I do on TradingView, because I use TradingView as a charting software, and I'll just set an alert before the break actually happens.
Mm-hmm.
Like for example, let's say Tesla's at 764, right? And that's my trigger point. That's where I want to enter. I'll put the alert for like a bit before that. Since Tesla's like a pretty big stock, right? It's heavily priced. I'm going to go, let's say like 30 cents out. So when that alert gets triggered, that brings my attention to Tesla. So now I'm watching Tesla. So when it starts to break 764, right, I already have my options chain loaded. I know which option I'm going to trade. And I want to see it break through the level like 5 to 10 cents, right? Like a clean, strong break with like heavy volume. Now, I don't necessarily wait for like a candle to close or like this and that, but ideally, like if you get a 2-minute candle close through that level for a day trade, right, just a shorter move, it's something that I'm interested in with like heavy volume.
Mm.
Now, I'd probably bypass that if there's just like continuous like Tesla flow coming in on the call side for the day trade. So like at that point, once we get that cross by like 5 cents or so, and there's just continuous flow coming in, I'm probably just going to enter the trade at that point. I always use limit orders for the breaks as well. And then like I have a stop and a take profit attached to them.
I just started using those. I can't believe it took me this long.
They save you.
Where do you set your bracket at?
Like on my platform, you mean? Or
like when you, is your take profit a percentage and with like a stop beneath it? What percentage do you like?
So my percent for the like on a day trade, I'll risk about like 20%. Of the premium. So like on $1,000, it'd be like $200, let's say, right? Mm-hmm. And then my take profit I do in tiers. So obviously if it's a heavily priced option, then it's going to be a bit harder to do in tiers. So my options sizing is based on the account risk. Mm-hmm. So like, let's just say for like argument's sake, I just want to risk $200. That's my per trade. And that's what my risk tolerance is going to be for the account. So if I risk $200 a trade, that means I can have a $1,000 premium position. So however that's divided based on the price, right? I can buy maybe two contracts that are worth $500. So I'll take one at about 30% and then the next one I'll try to ride it out. If each contract is about like $300, I have three, right? So I'll take it in tiers of three, right? So one at 30, one at like 45, 40, one at whatever. And then usually I like to have like at least like six contracts so I can go 2-2-2, but again, it's based on like the risk tolerance. So if that position is like if it's too heavily priced for me to buy six contracts, then like I'll just buy less contracts. So there's only a certain portion of the account used per day trade.
Mm-hmm.
So I know what the risk is based on that sum, right? So again, the way I work it is like, what's the risk per trade? If it's like $1,000, if it's $200, whatever, you work backwards based on the stop loss, then you can identify how many contracts you can buy.
Gotcha.
Okay. And does your which platform do you use to trade your options?
I use Interactive Brokers because I'm in Canada and they've got a really good brokerage and platform for like international. I wouldn't say the platform's amazing, but like it works well because I just use TradingView for my charting. Mm-hmm. If you're in America, like TOS, I think that's like the main one that people use.
Thinkorswim, that's what we're both using.
Yeah, that's the one that I would like, but we don't have access to that here.
I wanted to ask you, since I started doing futures, and like I love how with the order book on Sierra Charts, how you can just kind of drag your stops around.
Yeah.
Is there a way you can do that on Thinkorswim that we're missing? Or?
Oh, dude, I never used the platform. I'm the wrong person to ask.
Oh, damn it. Yeah, because you can see the order book. So when you pull up and say, I want to get in here, you just click it and click, right? Put your limit in, DOM. Set your brackets, and then you can just kind of click and drag them up and down the DOM. Yeah. Like, it'd be really nice if that was a, like, you do that. Is that how it works on Interactive Brokers, or do you have to, like, manually fill out?
Yeah, on Interactive Brokers, I can type it in, I can move it manually, I can do whatever I want to it. But there must be a way on Thinkorswim. It just doesn't seem like there.
Yeah, I think we just haven't spent enough time playing with it. I've been trying to slowly make the transition to it because I'd done everything just through the website previous, and it's just too cumbersome to try to type things in, especially when you're talking about, you know, trying to do something on a day trade where you got minutes to try to get everything figured out. Maybe it's time to go back to some sim.
Yeah, yeah, it's way easier to just place the bracket.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Fantastic. All right. So glad that Vic can be our expert on the software that he doesn't use.
I know, right? I just been wondering that because like, it really felt like I was opening my eyes when I was taking the futures courses and then seeing like this super easy way to trade. And like, oh man, like I wouldn't be sweating trying to punch in a ticket and like, no, wait, I don't want to now. Cancel, or
flatten,
change the price.
Flatten or cancel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I need a flatten button for sure.
So when you're looking at a swing trade, how does it differ than when you're looking at the day trade? Is it just the types of charts you're using?
Like a lot of people have been, or not a lot, but a few people have been actually asking me that, how to differentiate between like a day trade and a swing trade. And like for me, that question like sounds kind of weird because I guess I've been doing it for so long that it's like what do you, I didn't understand it at first. You know, like what do you mean? How do you differentiate between a swing trade and a day trade? Like, isn't it obvious? But I guess not. it's just more just looking at like the larger time frames and like seeing like the potential in them and just like choosing a longer strike. Like on swing trades, I'll usually start on like a weekly because weekly charts are they really show you where that like super strong resistance is. Like for example, if you pulled up like a weekly on Tesla or Palantir or which other one had a good one? Maybe Unity U, like one, I don't know, one of those three. Like Palantir had a great one recently. I'm pretty sure Tesla had one recently as well, but Palantir's was like 2750. I remember that level pretty well because we traded last week. And when you're looking at like a swing trade, I really like to start on the weekly because it just gives you those larger levels. It just kind of kills all the noise and lets you know, okay, well, there's like a pretty big level here that could break and there's room to the upside into whatever, 30 out of 2750, something like that. It's only a $2.5 move, but again, that's a substantial move percentage-wise, right, on a smaller stock. Mm-hmm. So, like, if you're doing a 2.5 on a 2750, what are we talking about here? That's a, what, 9% move, let's call it? 9.1, 10, 9, whatever. Mm-hmm. So, it's a pretty substantial move in the stock itself, and, like, you'll guess that the option's going to gain a lot more value than that, right?
Right.
So when I look at the weekly, I'll start there and just identify where those like key breakouts are, and then you'll go to the daily. And I don't really like to move too much below the daily on a swing trade because then it just becomes like you're looking at more like in depth, and you're starting to second guess. Oh, this could be a day trade. Like, let me just day trade this, then like not turn into a swing when it can be both realistically. But you want to have like a target set in mind for the swing trade. Like, what's the potential of this move? Like, where could it go to if it escapes this area? Mm-hmm. Right. Whether it's based on a percentage, whether it's based on just like a target, like a dollar target. And the other thing is like, just buy some time on it. Like for an option, if you're going to options trade it, buy some time, have the stop set and then go for it. Because I do a lot of short swings. So what I mean by that is like, I'll do like 2 to 3 weeks of time. And since they're a little more volatile, since they're shorter expiries, a lot of them actually hit profit like in the first few days or in like the first day, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So even if it's, even if it's supposed to be a swing, next thing I know, I'm out of like half of the position in the first day. You know what I mean?
Right.
Well, that's good though, because that means that the rest of it, you're riding risk-free.
Yeah, exactly. And like, I don't mind that at all. So like, now I understand like where the confusion came from. Like, why is this a swing? Why is that a day if you're out of the position in the first day? Right. It doesn't really matter. Like, if it hits 50% gain in the first day, like you should be taking some off. Right?
Right.
Like, based on risk management, like you need to be taking some off at that point. Right. It's kind of just like, I never understood the whole concept of like letting it ride until this like phantom number that exceeds your expectations, you know, and then just seeing it go red after. It's like, yeah, how far could it go? That's why you have like multiple contracts on, right? So you can layer out. Like if you're newer and you have a smaller account, like look for options that are a lot cheaper, right? That means that stocks that are a lot cheaper, and look to trade those, because it's always going to be better if you can get your hands on like three contracts. Because then you can expand the move as much as possible without like feeling like crap that you got out of the whole position too early, right? Because like, if it hits 30%, you take your first lot off and that's the only contract you have. And it goes to 100%, then you're not going to feel so great about that, right?
Right.
Right. Not that I've ever done that myself.
Yeah. So buy time and look at large time frames. That's it.
Okay. So do you want to look at a move that I did right before we closed and tell me why it was terrible? Or why you wouldn't have done it.
Let's see.
So Salesforce.
So CRM, you're taking what kind of trade on CRM today?
So about an hour before close, I was looking at to see if it was finding support around 279, which it seemed like it was doing.
Yep.
So I ended up picking up some of the monthly October 285 calls.
Yeah.
Thinking that this is just a slight pullback. And it's going to be rebounding in the next couple of days.
So, you're taking this as a swing, right? Like where there's potential support here.
Right. Like I'd like to be out of it before the end of the week.
Yeah. But. So like when it comes to like something like that, that's like not necessarily my strategy because it's just like this is the first day it's pulled back, right?
Mm-hmm.
I like to look at strictly breakouts if I'm going to swing trade it, even if it's like a few days, because that just gives you momentum. Like a breakout trade, there's a lot of momentum behind it, especially if there's a new high, like an unexplored high, an unexplored distribution of volume, for example, something that hasn't been seen in a while, something that could attract price. Like for example, when you guys mentioned Salesforce on Twitter, that was a great one because I was looking at it, but I wanted to see if we could break like organically through 260, 250, right? Mm-hmm. And the thing opens up at 269. That level's long gone. I'm not going to get long off the open. But then I notice there's another resistance around 275.20, right? It doesn't get that much further above 275.20, but that's a move that I'm willing to wait for. So in this scenario, I'd probably wait for the all-time high to break, right? To get into a potential swing, or I'd wait for it to come down to wherever and start bottoming out and like start rotating. So you see where between like September 13th and 14th, right, where it started like rotating and holding a support zone.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't like exactly super equal on all stands. It was like between 250, 250 and like 256, right? You're starting to see some kind of support. Now those areas, like they're okay for swings, like to start picking things up. I don't like pullbacks on swings personally, unless it's just like a huge, huge support and you buy a lot of time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm more of the breakout trade. So like in this scenario, like what you've done is, yeah, if you look at it on a 5 minute or a 10 minute, like I do see the support as clear as day, right? But if I zoom out for a swing, because I want to mainly stay on the daily, it's not giving me that that confidence yet, right?
Well, I feel like I was at least a dollar early anyway, because I was looking at the little rotation that happened around 278. I'm looking at the hourly chart that was on the end of the day on the 23rd. So,
yeah, no, I do like that. If you look at it even on a 10 minute, you can see where it bounced off that 79-ish area like a few times into the end of the day. Like, I don't think this is like a necessarily bad trade. It's just something that I don't look at for like my strategy, right? Because like it's doing a break and retest, like exactly, right?
Mm-hmm.
I just found I have higher success waiting for breakouts on stocks.
So you would have been happier buying this when on the 23rd when it was set to pop, and then trying to continue that momentum.
Exactly. That's what we did in our room too. Like, I didn't look at it on 23rd, even though it ran, but on the 24th, like, we bought the breakout of 279.50, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then it ran all the way up to 285.50 or so, right? So a $6 yeah. move there. Now, if I were to continue this swing trade, I'd need to see it above like 286.40, right? To really break that top and see if that momentum can continue.
And then you'd be wanting to get in again.
Yeah, then I'd if that was like a swing that I was looking for, then yeah, I'd rather get that. Even for a day trade, like you see how it's like kind of dropping off and you can mm-hmm. see around like 281.15. If we break those two tops, then that becomes a potential move back to the upside. I just really gravitate towards the breakouts because what I'm doing is I'm catching the move on momentum. So when I catch the move on momentum and big volume, like there's you're right away.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So you don't have to wait and you don't have to worry, oh my God, is my stop going to get hit? If it gets hit, then it gets hit fast, like big deal, right? But you're right pretty much right away and you have time to adjust and lower your risk.
I think that's something too that we've been learning the more we study futures is that you don't want to fight the trend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. If you have the trend on your side, then you'll be right more often than not.
Exactly.
What do you think some of your biggest obstacles were in getting the hang of trading options?
My biggest obstacles were just like waiting, to be honest. Because like I was always able to like read everything and like anticipate and like qualify it well, but it's just waiting for that better move, you know, like mm-hmm. waiting for that real move, waiting for it to actually break and like using your confirmation. Because one of the main things that I noticed was, let's say I'm day trading, because I do a lot more of that than swing trading, but if I'm day trading the options position, the first move of the day always gets me. So it's like if I have a trigger point at, if a stock is at 279.5, right? And I have a trigger point at 280, that's 50 cents away. If that happens within the first candle, within the first 5 minute candle,
yeah.
What I used to do was like kind of just like jump in, but it's like more often than not, it's going to be a head fake. So it's going to pop above the level
mm-hmm.
and then pull back just as fast. Right. It can move if there's like news and like momentum and there's actually reason for it to do so. But a lot of the times it's like I'm getting into this trade and I'm not getting out fast enough, even if I do see some profit right away, right? It just turns on me. So I've learned to just wait like the first 15, 20 minutes. There's always going to be opportunity after the first 15 minutes like of the day. It just took me a long time to realize that.
I think I was listening in your guys' Zoom call when you were starting to do that.
Yeah, yeah.
I think you'd mentioned you've been burned a few times by it. Like, yeah, I know that feeling.
Yeah, exactly. It's just you want to get in right away and you don't realize that like the market hasn't really made its mind up, right?
Yeah, patience is, I think a lot of people struggle with that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I feel a sense of urgency when I've like looked at the stock and I set my trigger zones. And I'm like, oh, big volume through this zone. That's what I'm looking for. And like it opens up, and in the first 5 minutes, like you said, it hits it, and like volume's really high. It's hard for me to sit back and then like watch it keep going and be like, well, if I just hit that trigger to buy, I still do because you know, I'm taking your advice very seriously. But it still does hurt to watch it just barrel upward, or downward.
It does happen. Yeah, it does for sure happen. Like that's why like I kind of bypass that rule if there's just like kind of some news that's driving it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like if there's some kind of reasoning behind it, because yeah, that could probably just, it's probably going to take it a lot higher, and you're obviously watching volume, you're watching the order flow as well if it comes in. But like for example, Tesla today, like I got the first breakout above like 77470 and it ran up to 77850, and that was like, it was worth a decent bit, and I was like, you know what, I'm just going to tighten the stop, and then it pulls back, that same candle pops back up the next candle, and I'm like, okay, you know what, I'm just going to wait for this.
Mm-hmm.
So like there was a profit out of it, it's just it wasn't the move that I was expecting, and it made sense because it was the first 5 minute candle. So like those are usually head fakes because everyone's getting into the market, you don't really know where like the big players want to take it yet. They're kind of just getting a feel for it. There's a lot of volume that comes in off the market open, right?
Right.
Like there's a lot of people that don't trade stocks until the market open. You can't trade options until the market opens, right?
Mm-hmm.
So like that money doesn't come in until 9:30 and it could be a little more erratic. So that's why I choose to sit back in the first like 5, 10, 15 minutes even and just see, okay, what is the trend? Like what's shaping up? Like where are the good levels for me to get into? And then go from there rather than just getting in on that first move. Unless it's like heavily news driven. At that point, like I said, I'll just kind of disregard that and say, okay, well, there's going to be news and I see in the first like 30 seconds, they're just like, I don't know, 10 sweeps of goal, like 10 sweeps of calls come in on like order flow. Then it's kind of, it makes it a little easier right. on the decision, right? Because another thing is like the first 5 minute candle, you'll probably notice is almost all the time the biggest volume candle.
Right. Yep.
Until like the last candle of the day, right? Like there's a reason for that because the most like most participants get their orders filled, like big funds, right? They go like market at open fills or close fills, whatever it is. So the first candle and the last candle of the day are usually the largest volume candles of the day.
Is that because the people who call their brokers and say, "Hey, I want a piece of this"?
Well, it's not retail money, right? It's funds. Mm-hmm. They're gonna move that, and they'll just have orders, let's say from the prior day, right? That they just want to get them filled at market off the open, right? Or the same thing at close. It's like, you know what? Like I want this to fill at exactly 4 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
What would lead you to pick that time over a specific price? Is it just the size of the order?
Like the first 5-10 minutes, you mean?
Yeah, like why are they moving that? Why is the time seemingly arbitrary? Like why is that a good move for a big hedge fund to make?
Well, it's not arbitrary because it's just a position from the other day, right? And they're gonna fill it at market. It doesn't matter what the price is to them, right? It's a decision made from like the prior day at the close or whatever it is. Because well, number one, there might not be enough liquidity to do it overnight or pre-market, and number two, maybe they're not allowed to.
Mm. Right. Yeah, interesting.
So you'll notice most of the big positions, they come in at close and they come in at open. That's another piece of order flow. When you look at the largest position shares being bought or sold at the end of the day,
mm-hmm.
the prior day at 4 p.m., they usually have something to do with a potential mover throughout the next day, right?
I was just about to ask. So if everyone's buying it at 4 p.m. on Monday at close, can you expect that to continue on Tuesday?
Yeah, exactly. So you do have some expectation to see that specific name have some kind of continuation, right? It's not 100% guaranteed, but that's why you just look at like the biggest orders, like 100 mil, maybe like 50 mil plus, something that really, really sticks out, right? It's not like any order. And I wouldn't put too much emphasis on like SPY and the triple Qs or ETFs because they're usually traded for like hedge purposes a lot. So like people mm-hmm. Funds will like buy them and sell them just to hedge like different positions. So when I see like SPY or triple Qs being bought like a lot at the close, I kind of take it with a grain of salt. But if it's like, I don't know, Ford, right? Ford's mm-hmm. the biggest end of day purchase. You're like, oh, okay, like I need to watch Ford tomorrow, for example. But the thing is, those numbers usually don't come out until the next morning, unfortunately.
So is that like what you're waking up and looking at?
Yeah, exactly. So it'd be something that I'd be interested in. Like, okay, like what were some of the large share purchases that happened yesterday, right? And then I'd also look at like what's some of the biggest volume this morning? What was some of the biggest volume yesterday?
So what keeps you trading options instead of futures? Because we've talked to George a lot about why he loves futures. But I just rewatched your market structure on futures and was wondering why you stick with options.
I kind of do both, to be honest.
Mm.
Like I'll trade futures a lot more passively. So what I mean by that is like I have like when I start my day, I'll usually post in the futures room. I've got like usually like 3-4 levels, right? And if price manages to enter one of those levels, then there's a possibility for me to act.
Mm-hmm.
If it doesn't, then like whatever, I bypass the futures, right? And what I do with futures is I'll have like a wider stop and I'll have a wider take profit. So it kind of just coasts throughout the day. It's not something that I manage actively or look at actively. I do only day trade them.
Okay, so you start the morning setting your levels and placing your potential orders and then walk away?
I don't place the orders. I just place alerts to see what would happen in those areas.
Okay.
Because if I just leave the orders on, then like who knows? Right.
Right.
Like, and I don't want to hold them overnight either. So if I'm in a position, then I make sure that I'm out of it by the end of the day, because I don't want to hold like heavy margin throughout the, it's not even throughout the night. It's an hour, and like, I don't know, you get a gap of 30 points and I'm like, okay, well shit, like there goes my account, you know?
Right. So,
and the margin increases too. So like if I don't have enough margin to hold the day trade position, then they'll just blow me out of it. So, like you said, like I'll set the levels. I'll just wait for them. I'll set the trigger instead of the actual limit, and I'll just like see what happens. If it gets triggered, then like I'll make a move. Like for example, today, like even George, I think George and I were trading the same level, but I was looking at like 4430, 4431 on the futures as it pulled back. Waited for it to kind of rotate there, picked some up, rode it up into like 37 ish. So yeah, like it was like a 6-7 point move. But usually I kind of look for more if there's potential, but it was kind of a choppier day. That was the only futures trade that I took today. But the why I trade options more so than futures is that there's more opportunity in terms of different stock names. So for futures, if it's like a choppy crappy day like today, then I'd rather make more call money in the options market than like lose my head in the futures market.
Right.
So I noticed that that would be the case, because I'd like force myself to trade a lot more in futures. And now that I have this more like relaxed approach to futures, it's a lot easier for me to like I said, like identify those levels. Like for example, my level today was 4430, 4446, so 4446, and
that was the previous day cash close.
Oh well, that's, I didn't even know that. So that level
volume hump there.
Yeah, like it was based on volume, because I just trade mainly on like volume profiles and stuff. So that level, and then I had another level below at like 4420. So like those three main levels, right? And I just kind of set the alerts and see what happens in those areas. And then I just took one trade today. It was around like 11:50 on the futures side. My entry was 31. My stop was 28. So I usually use a 3-point stop, and I look for at least like 7 to 8 points. And then I got out around like 37 or so. So it was like a 6-point move or so. Yeah, and it's more calming, like when I know that I can go into like options activity and I can look through like a list of like 100 stocks, and there's probably going to be one that looks good. You know, there's probably going to be three that look good, probably more, but like I know that there's going to be a good portion of them that are going to be tradable. They're going to be liquid. There's going to be opportunity like within the next like half an hour, instead of futures where it's like if it's moving, it's great, but if it's not, then I'm kind of just like sitting around like making trades up.
Right.
And with options, like I always want to look at like a million different stocks. So it's a lot more calming for me. I don't know if that's the case for a lot of people, but.
Well, it definitely sounds like it would help with trying to keep you from forcing stuff. If you always got something else that you can go back and look for opportunity, you're not trying to manufacture it, like you said.
That's the thing, like you understand at a certain point, I don't know if everyone feels that way like at the beginning, but you start to understand that like, hey, you know what, if I miss this move, like I can easily go to let's say we're looking at Tesla, and you miss the Tesla move, and you say, oh, you know what, like there's probably something that's kind of related to Tesla that I could probably catch.
Let's go check a look at NIO.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So like that's the other thing with stocks, like it's a good point you bring up, that there's a lot of things that are correlated. So I like the correlation between the FANG names, so like Facebook, Apple, Amazon, Google, Netflix, Microsoft, and the Qs and the SPY.
Mm-hmm.
So the ETFs, the Qs and the SPY, I really like them because there's usually a catch-up trade there. Like if you guys were in the room, like there's always a catch-up trade of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
Or with the FANG names, right? Like today, for example, we bought SPY, Qs, and Apple because Apple was starting to bottom out and showing some support, right?
Right.
So Apple started to go, and then you see Qs and SPY go, right? So that was like the catch-up trade there. Let's say I missed Apple, but the Qs haven't gone. I know the Qs are going to catch up to Apple. It's like a $2.5 trillion market cap, right? It's going to move the whole thing.
Right.
So it's just, it just gives me that opportunity, whereas in futures, it helped me actually trade futures because I became more patient with the futures and kind of took like a step back.
Did you take the actual courses that George put together, or were you there beforehand?
Yeah, but like the older ones, like these ones I had a hand in helping, the futures one.
Did,
that that he redid in 2019, so 2 years ago now.
Okay. Were you part of the decision to make the 21-day waiting periods, or was that always there?
Yeah. It was, I think I didn't decide on it, but I provided feedback on that.
I can't wait to talk to George again, because as much as I hated it going through it, and Dan's in the middle of his, I think that might be the single best thing I've done for my trading, is taking that.
It was for sure his idea. I'm not going to take any credit for that, but I was there while he was like making the course and like provided feedback for the course itself. And that, I do remember that very well, because I think that was like an issue for everyone. Everyone just like the whole idea behind that was because we noticed that everyone would just like either not do the course or just jump into trading right away.
Mm-hmm.
And always just ask questions are good, right? But it was like questions where it's like, you can tell that this person had not watched like a single lesson of the course.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's like, oh, okay, well, if you don't know that and you've watched the course, and like there might be bigger problems, right?
Right.
So like that was the whole point of it, because it just like eliminates a lot of uncertainty in yourself. Like it elevates confidence, and it just it forces you to just like chill for a bit, you know, like do it step by step and like do it like properly, so you understand what you're looking at, instead of like doing it all frantically just because you want to like start.
I know. I know the feeling. I would actually venture to say the best part of that though is teaching me the patience.
Yeah.
After spending 21 days of watching the market movements, I'm no longer stressing over missing a big jump. I'm like, oh, all right, I'll get the next one.
Yeah.
Because there's going to be another one. Might be an hour, might be 5 minutes, but there'll be another one.
Yeah, there's always going to be some other move. When it comes to futures trading, though, you're going to have to wait a little longer for those moves. But like, that's the thing, that there's always going to be something else. You got to be a little more patient. Like, there's going to be something throughout the day, even if you're sitting there all day. The unfortunate part is that a lot of the action does happen overnight, which is sleep time for most of us.
Oh, really? I have not really paid too much attention to overnight.
Yeah. Take a look at the overnight trading. Like, for example, yesterday, the thing dropped from like 73 to 30, right? So you get like a 40-point move in like a few hours.
I might have to stay up and actually do an overnight session.
I have a few times, but it becomes addictive.
Does it?
Yeah.
I'd care less if I'm,
like, so you know, you're never sleeping,
tripling my money. I used to work night shift before.
It had a steep rise before it as well.
Yeah, exactly. Like
just real quick, back to options for a minute. We're talking about correlations and how, like, if you see, you know, Apple $2.5 trillion market cap going up, triple Qs are going to catch up. Do you ever see the other correlation? Do you ever see the QQQ leading Apple?
It depends what the other fangs are doing. So, like, with the Qs, the big fang, like, names, I'm going to lie to you guys, but it's around 35% of the whole index, right?
Right.
It's around that sum. It's not exactly that. But the SPY, for example, it's around, like, 20 to 25. So, there's a big difference in, for example, those two correlations, with the fang holding a lot more weight on the Qs. So, it depends on what the other fang names are doing, because the fang doesn't necessarily have to move together, right? Because if you're getting crap news in four of them and Apple's the only one flying high, then realistically, you're going to get that drop in the queues, and then Apple's probably going to follow along, right?
Mm-hmm.
In like those kind of circumstances. But like sometimes they deviate. They do deviate, because if there's no real reason for Apple to keep dropping, then it's probably not going to drop. Like stocks are going to dictate the move of the index rather than the other way around for the most part. Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
For the most part. But yeah, you can see scenarios like that for sure. Like, I kind of use Apple as like a canary, right? If I'm trading the SPY and I trade, I'll use the VIX as the canary and Apple. But the SPY with Apple, yeah, okay, there's correlation there, obviously, because it's a big portion of the SPY, but the SPY has it has 11 sectors, right?
Right.
Tech is just one of them. So over the past few days, the SPY has been flying high because energy has been going to the moon, right? And that's only a portion of it. And a few other sectors like financials that are heavily weighted, which are 14%, right? I don't know exactly what energy is on the SPY, but there was a few sectors that together were like, 30%, and tech was kind of going up, but not really that much. And the SPY was just rocketing, right?
Mm.
So like knowing what is in each sector, each sector, but knowing what sectors are in each index and like what their weight is does help you find that relative strength and does help you understand, okay, like, if Apple's dying. That's the easiest one, right? Everyone should know that. If Apple's dying, right? It got hit last week or 2 weeks ago. I can't remember. There was some news. Then what do? You sell all the indices. Right.
And God, sell the indices if Apple. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right.
That's what we were doing. We traded the... One last thing. We trade the Apple event live, and those things like never do well. Mm-hmm. So it was just like buy Apple puts, buy SPY and triple Q puts into the close, and that's all we need to do.
Oh, was that the Apple, the when they were unveiling the new phone?
Yeah. They never do well. It's like
I read a news article that said 8 out of 10 times the stock's going to drop after one of their events.
Yeah. It's something like that.
I was eyeing puts right before it, and Dan and I were talking about it, and I was I didn't like how much the volatility had increased for it though, because I knew that was going to burn off pretty quick.
It's an uncertain event, right? Like once that low broke, you just buy the puts.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Hold them for like 30 minutes. Close them. Collect money. You're done.
Collect money.
When's their next one?
Yeah. Right. So basically, you're talking about kind of having the FANG stocks be the roadmap for how we can project the indices to do.
Yeah. It's just like the sheer size of them that influences what the indices do, right? Like mainly the triple Qs with the FANG because they're a larger part of it.
Right.
But like if you there's a website. Let me spell it out for you guys here. I forget what it was called. Or sorry, sectorspdr.com. And you can look at all the SPY sectors there. And there's a cool little tool that's called Sector Tracker under the tools aspect. If you go to Sector Tracker, you can see all 11 sectors there and you can see how they do on a daily basis, on a weekly basis, monthly, blah, 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 right? So on a daily basis, this is good to know because you can see, okay, which sectors did well today? Surprise, surprise, right? Energy is at the top. It's gained 3.5%. Then you got financials, right? And then you're looking at tech. Tech's down almost a percentage point. So this is how I like to find relative strength. And overall, net, the sectors in the SPY are red today. That's why the SPY is down a bit, right? But if you look at energy, for example, you can see what the biggest gainers in energy are and maybe look to trade some of those throughout the day or just understand what the correlations are here. So if you look at the biggest gainers in the tech sector, it's like Hewlett and Packard Enterprise. I didn't even know that was tech, for example. HP's up there. So this isn't the FANG. Right? Like none of them were the FANG.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at NASDAQ, for example, and you know what NASDAQ's made of. It's a tech sector, right? I mean, it's a tech index. So you have Apple, Microsoft, Amazon, and Tesla are the top four holdings. Then Google is 5 and 6 because they've got A and
right.
C shares, I think. And then you got Facebook, Nvidia, PayPal, Netflix is up there as well. But the first three are like a big part of the FANG, right? Not all the largest, but pretty much the largest companies in the FANG, right? And they make up, alone, those three make up about 29%, 28% of the whole NASDAQ.
Mm-hmm.
Apple, Amazon, and Google? So,
Apple, Amazon, and Microsoft.
Oh, Microsoft.
So it's important to know, like, what individual FANG news is, like, what individual FANG news is doing, because, let's say, I don't know, three of them have news together, like Apple and Google had news, like bad news,
right?
A few weeks ago. Well, Apple is almost 11%, Google is about 7-ish, 8-ish, right? So that's almost 20% of the index in two names that just got destroyed, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's probably going to be some downside in the queues.
Yeah.
Right. Sounds like I need to put a correlation chart up of the FANG stocks.
Yeah.
What was the name of that? What was that website again?
Sector SPDR.
Yeah, sectorspdr.com, and then you can go into the tools tab.
SPDR.com. I'll make sure we link that.
Yeah, that's those are the SPY sectors.
Mm-hmm.
If you're looking up for NASDAQ, I'm not sure what the NASDAQ one is, but you know NASDAQ is all tech, so
right.
Just go by that. Not all, but mostly.
What were you saying, Dan?
If I had a correlation matrix of some sort.
Yeah.
The correlation that you have on the futures chart book.
Yeah, I actually did have some lines for the FANG, plus Microsoft, I guess. FANG, I don't know. But
FANGM.
Yeah, FANGM. So I did have one of those. I haven't used it in a while, actually, so it's a good reminder. But I did. It was just like a line chart of all of them, like gaining, losing, like on a 5-minute chart, and then taking a look at them and seeing what they're doing. Actually, I usually use that for futures trading here and there, too.
It seems like it'd be useful.
So will those names then affect futures? Like if if the Fang is ripping higher, we just see futures going higher?
Well, yeah, because it's like futures are still a derivative asset of like the overall indices, right? So NASDAQ futures are futures from the NASDAQ index itself. And like that's being propped up or pushed down by the Fang itself. So there's a lot of volume in futures, right? Like they have their own volume and stuff like that because they don't account for dividends. That's why there's a slight price discrepancy between the spot and the futures.
Okay. I was wondering.
But yeah, they're going to get affected by the Fang names, by big tech.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, if the indices themselves are falling, the value of the futures contract is going to fall or gain, depending on if you bought or sold it.
Yeah.
All right, Kyle, any big pressing questions you have left before we...
I have one other one. And I was thinking about this. Dan and I were talking about maybe trying to write a screenplay. So we wonder if you'd be willing to contribute or star in this, Vico.
Yeah, what's my role?
The idea is that it's going to be about two friends who start trading futures, but because they don't understand what the actual expiration of them means, they end up, you know, having to take orders of, like, you know, oil and orange juice futures. Yeah. Yeah, it's about these guys trying to figure out what to do with all these fucking futures contracts that they had to take possession of.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bartering okay, what's my can I be the market maker in it?
Oh, yeah, you can be whatever you want. You don't want to be the idiot who didn't realize what he was actually buying?
No. He wants to be the guy that calls up and says, "No, you're taking delivery of this oil, motherfucker. We made a contract."
Yeah, exactly. Right. There you go.
Oh, God.
There we go.
So do you know anybody who's actually ever mistakenly purchased 1,000 barrels of oil?
No. I wish I did, but it's maybe back in the day someone's done something like that, but it's more sophisticated right now. They'll usually blow you up. They're not going to make you take delivery.
I'd take delivery. Come stack them in my backyard.
Yeah, you got one contract. Next thing you know, you have 1,000 barrels of oil. Like, I don't even know what the surface area of that would be. Like, I don't even know how much oil that is. Like, how much is it? What is it? Like 100 liters?
Barrels, 55 gallons.
Is that kind of 100 liters?
About
what's 55 gallons.
3.78 liters in a gallon.
3.78. Oh, that's a lot more than damn.
It'd be about 200 liters a barrel.
Yeah, 200 liters, 210.
And times 1,000 of those. So 208,000 liters.
That's too many liters. I don't know what to do with that.
Probably fill a swimming pool and a half.
We're trying to ruin the wetlands here. Bring your ducks by. I'll dip them in the pool of oil.
If you do happen to take delivery, they'll hold it for you. There's a storage fee, obviously. I forget where it was, man. It's somewhere in the U.S.
Chicago.
What the?
But yeah.
Next to the
right.
Come pick him up.
We've got a friend who's a truck driver. Maybe he can deliver him for us.
Oh, there you go.
I'd take the pork barrel or 90 trips. Yeah. How many pork bellies is one contract worth?
I don't know. That's
a lot of bacon.
1,000 pigs showing up at your door. You got to slaughter them, man.
Oh, yeah, you got to slaughter them and skin them yourself.
Oh, what?
Yeah,
All right, so we write that, then we got a roll for Vico.
Perfect. Can't wait.
All right, Vico, is there anything you want to share with the folks out there? We got your YouTube channel, Trade Pro Academy. We've got our affiliate link for people that want to join, try to take some of these classes we've been talking about, quant data. I also noticed that you're starting to do a lot more of the market research. You got the Market Research Center over at Trade Pro. That is awesome.
Yeah, we got the market research up and running. It's been a project that we've been working on, and we're continuously elaborating it, right? Like, it's still in like its infancy, I would say, where we'd post like futures analysis throughout the week, and on the weekends also options analysis on the weekends, like swings that we're looking for, newsletters, and stock analysis once a month or so. If anything else pops up, we'll post it in the Discord, but just generally share ideas. And as we progress, it's going to get a lot better. But yeah, it's just a lot of like different ideas and a lot of different potential trades on a weekly basis that we post instead of just having it scattered all over Discord.
Right.
It gets hard to find.
Yeah, it really is. No, I love the new market center. I love the email updates. And I know you put a lot of work into those. So I hope you keep doing
appreciate
it.
Appreciate that.
Well, thank you so much for joining us again, Vico. It's always great to have you here. You are a man of a wealth of experience and knowledge, and we are very humbled be able to pick your brain. So thank you again. Always great having you.
Thanks for having me, Dan and Kyle. I really enjoy these podcasts.
With the set of your new song too.
And yeah, that's why I came. I wanted to hear a rendition of Drake's song.
Oh man, oh,
the Vico slide. Yeah, it's gonna be a huge
the
hit.
Vico slide. Yeah, always fun with you guys, and yeah, keeping in touch with you guys on Twitter. I know I was gone for like almost a month and a half in Europe, not really responding to anyone, but I'm back and I've sobered up and I'm ready to start trading.
All right, well, there you have it.
Torio Trades, fellas.
Torio Trades, at Torio Trades. Follow him on Twitter. He does great morning updates. He sets some trigger levels that are really awesome. Check that out.
Mm-hmm.
And until next time, folks, happy trades.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us. You can find us off air at twobullsinachinashop.com. That's the number 2BullsInAChinaShop.com. Make sure you check us out. Download us on any streaming network. Blah, 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 blah. You know what to do. Rate, subscribe.
Two Bulls in a China Shop is an entertainment program, and all thoughts and opinions expressed in the show belong to the hosts and not of any company. They are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or on any specific security or investment product. It is only intended to provide entertainment about stocks and the financial industry of trading. If you make trades based on what you hear in this show, you assume all risks for those trades.